Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive.
So I would ask how you're doing, like I usually do, Cassie, but I don't know if I should today because the sigh might last the entire episode, you know?
Like, oh my God, guys. Well, I've just had an interesting couple weeks. I'm not going to go over everything that has happened in my life the last couple weeks. It's, you know, I feel bad like being like, this happened and this happened, this happened, because there's just crazy things happening in the world. So
sure,
I'm fine. I'm okay. But yes, everything that could go wrong has just gone wrong for me in the last couple of weeks, and it's kind of hilarious. And then last night, I didn't sleep, which I worried Caitlin a bit with a apparently alarming text.
I got a text this morning at 7 a.m. my time, which is like 6 a.m. for Cassie, right? This text says, I'm low-key scared for my life because I don't think I've fallen asleep yet.
Okay.
And I'm like, I'm sorry. What does that mean? Like, what in the cryptic horror-esque shit is that?
I am really dramatic about my sleep because my body is very dramatic about my sleep. And if I don't get, genuinely, if I get less than 8 hours, I have a really groggy first half of my day, and I'm moving slow in my head, and my sometimes even nausea hits if I'm only got 7 hours of sleep, which is ridiculous. But last night, I genuinely don't think I fell asleep until like 7 a.m. And I think
crazy.
I slept for like an hour and a half. And then I came over here and I was like, hello, let's do this.
Let's talk about horror stuff.
Yeah. So I don't know. I was just, there was a lot on my mind, and I was just thinking about everything that I need to get done this week, and I couldn't sleep, which is very weird. It's not like Caitlin was genuinely confused because she's like, there's no way you just haven't gotten sleep. That's just not me, but
it's not Cassie.
Maybe this episode's going to have some weird energy. I don't know.
It probably will. And it's fitting for like a 1981 slasher. So
it is.
Kind of works. Yeah. By the way, we're like, our whole like recording such situations off. So you had to have watched some horror since we last spoke.
I regret to inform you that yes, I have.
Good, good.
I watched a movie called Killstreak.
Okay.
Which I did watch with a podcast in mind because the premise was very fun. Mm-hmm. It came out last year, and it's basically a bunch of gamers. On Twitch.
Oh, love.
Yeah. I actually don't know. I don't think they used Twitch. I don't think they can do that. But it was Twitch.
Sure. Yeah.
And they all like get invited to play this game. Like they get invited by a random mysterious developer to play this game. And so they all play the game. And then, of course, as they play the game and their characters die, they die in real life.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought that was a really fun idea. But I fear the only redeeming quality – redeeming. This is not me misspeaking here. The only redeeming quality of the movie is how bad the acting is. Because that is the only reason why I was entertained.
Oh yeah,
like wait, it was
is this
fun.
The one you texted me about?
Yeah, it's like freaking Austin Mahomes and
that's some wild
girl from Dance Moms. Oh my God, the acting, and actually there was like some real gamers I think that they casted as well.
Bro, cast me, like I know. I'm so down. That's so funny.
You would have done better. You would have done better. You would have like outshined all of them.
I'm a pro actress over here. So
yeah,
I got it covered. That sounds fun, though.
So I do wish I could force that movie upon everyone. It's like the perfect sleepover movie. Like if you just want to laugh at something stupid with your friends, watch that movie. Yeah.
Okay, will do. It's weird looking at my week in horror list because it's like I feel like I talked about this stuff, but like I don't think I did. And my brain's just broken. But I watched Jennifer's Body. I don't think we talked about this.
No, we haven't.
What a fun movie.
Yes.
What an absolutely ridiculous film.
I saw people, I was there, so Caitlin does like these Patreon exclusive discussions and deep dives for the horror movies she does reactions to, and I was sat for the Jennifer's Body discussion, and in there it was mentioned that it's more considered like just straight up comedy than horror, which made me very curious and excited about your reaction to it, because I was like, okay, it's very heavy comedy. How does that make you feel?
I think it's just like Megan Fox and Amanda. I never know how to say her last name.
I always say Seyfried.
Yeah, I kind of say that too, and then I change it up every time I say it. But both of them were really good in the movie. And just Megan Fox's delivery of her lines is so, so perfect. Even though the lines sometimes are like, what did you just say? That combined with a plot that actually works is what made me like it. Because I thought it was just going to lean too much into the comedy and not care about the actual logistics of the plot.
Yeah.
But they actually followed through with the demonic side of things. And I thought that was really cool. And it was something I hadn't seen before.
Interesting. I wonder if maybe that's what your common aversion to comedy horror is because a lot of the times it's just like so plotless, which can happen with horror.
Sure.
But it's harder to like stay engaged when it's just like comedy that you're not vibing with and then there's also no plot.
Yeah, like, exactly.
But yes, Jennifer's Body, of course, delivers.
I don't know if I've talked about the fact that I've been watching Midnight Mass, but I have been watching that and that's been amazing. 10 out of 10. I'm like four episodes into that. And then most recently, as in yesterday, I finished reading Salem's Lot finally.
I saw. I'm so excited for you. That's like, it's so exciting to finish a Stephen King book.
It really is. Because as much as I love Stephen King, love his writing, like it can be a challenge to get through his books sometimes because there's a lot of downtime, a lot of let me explain the backstory of this character who really doesn't matter that much, but you need to know every detail about everything they've been through in their life. And like those parts can drag on a little, but the like climax and the plot actually was really good in the end.
That's a Stephen King plot I know nothing about. I don't know what that movie book is. I'm totally like ignorant of that one.
Noted.
Yeah.
I did watch a movie called My Bloody Valentine.
Yes.
Which like happy almost Valentine's Day ? I think. I don't even know at this point.
Yeah, this is our Valentine's Day episode.
It is our Valentine's Day episode. My Bloody Valentine is a Canadian film directed by George Mihalka and written by John Beard. And it's very much a cult following film, only made $5.7 million in the box office, which was more than the $2.3 million budget, but was by no means like a crazy success. And oh, this, I forgot about this because I wrote this part of the script so long ago. 9 whole minutes were cut from this film by the MPA, citing violence and gore. 3 of those minutes were released in the 2009 version that came out on DVDs. But yeah, there were 9 whole minutes that the MPA said, you have to cut these or we're not giving you an R rating.
I'm so curious, like, how dramatic they were being.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? If we saw it now, I wonder, like, on a scale of, like, oh my God, to nothing, like, how nothing it is. But it got cut back then,
Yeah, they even said that they, like, you know, they were given the film back to make the edits. They made the edits, sent it back to MPA, and they still gave them the X rating, and they had to cut more. So people are really curious about those 6 missing minutes, like what was in them. Because
they have to be somewhere.
Yeah. No, they still exist. They do still exist. They haven't been put out. They put out 3 of those minutes in the 2009 version, which was the same year that the remake came out, which I have not watched yet. Again, we're going to be using the worksheet. We're enjoying the worksheet. I hope you guys are enjoying the worksheet if that's something you're choosing to work with. If you want the interactable version of the worksheet, you can check that out on our Discord, which you can access via our Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. Over there, you can literally like fill out a form that does the math for you. Yeah.
That would be me because I have a hard time doing the math here in the moment. So if I was just a listener of the pod, I'd be like, you want me to do math? Like, no, I'm not doing that. But don't worry, you don't have to.
Yeah. So check it out and contribute to our community score because that's kind of fun. So let's get into this movie. The film opens in the depths of a mine. 2 miners wearing their full getup, including respirators, wander the tunnels with their pickaxes in hand. It's quiet. We can hear water droplets falling and echoing through the tunnels, and the breathing of the miners through their mask is very much in our ears, you know, that heavy respirator breathing. The two miners reach an intersection and stop. Wordlessly, they glance around. They seem to be checking that there's nobody else in sight. And suddenly, one of the miners is undressing.
Okay.
She's pulling.
It's 1981.
It's 1981, exactly. This opening is very 1981.
Actually, I think all miners in 1981 had to do it naked.
That's what happened. Can you imagine? Oh my God. Anyway, she's pulling down her coveralls to reveal her lacy white bra underneath. Mm-hmm. And she takes off her respirator and shakes out her long blonde hair. Girlie has a face full of makeup and a red heart tattoo on her left boob, most women.
Yeah.
So the other miner approaches her and he slams his pickaxe into the wall behind her before they begin getting intimate. Oh, I forgot about this. Okay. So the woman unzips/unbuttons his coveralls and caresses his face, which is still masked, by the way.
Oh.
And she tries to take the mask off, and he does like the most dramatic head shake with a breathy no. He's like, his head's like all back. No. And it's like, okay, what the fuck is happening?
The hell?
But okay, no. So you know the like how respirators have that breathing tube thingy?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, she starts like suggestively playing with it and rubbing her hands on it. Yes. Yes.
Is it like, is it funny or is it like really trying to be sexy?
I don't know.
Because it's just never sexy to you. So you're like, what's the frame of reference?
It's funny because this is the start of the movie and I immediately was like, oh no.
Yeah.
So she's doing all that. And then the guy grabs her tattooed boob and he's like shaking. He's so excited, right? Oh,
okay.
No, he's not shaking.
Okay, I'm happy that you went there at the same time I did, and I didn't have to explain where I just went.
Rereading the script, I'm like, wait, it sounds like he's about to shake. Never mind. Okay. So.
Okay.
So he grabs her body, right? And then he slams her into the back of his pickaxe.
Oh.
And.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
And the woman screams, and we do that zoom into the mouth shot to the title card for My Bloody Valentine.
Yes.
And the two O's in bloody are hearts, and one of them, like, releases a drop of blood. It's kind of, like, it's a cute. Cool intro screen. Yeah.
I like a creative title card.
Yeah. It was fun. Yeah. Wild opening scene.
Yeah. I, of course, he's the killer. As soon as he didn't want to take that mask off, I was like, all right, I see.
He really did it because he was shaking his head like, no. It was great.
Oh, he's a drama queen. Okay.
Thursday, February 12th is the date, and a group of miners are arriving back on the surface via mine carts after a long day's work. It's a young group of guys, and they head into the shower room to clean up before heading out. This scene is very much guys being dudes in the 80s. They're talking about the fact that Valentine's Day is Saturday, and they all really only have one thing on their minds. And
well, yes.
It's, you know,
chocolate.
Yes, because that is what they plan on giving their girls for Valentine's Day is chocolate and nothing else.
They're so sweet.
So one of the guys, TJ, he's like, y'all are a bunch of clowns. Some things never change. And one of the other dudes is like, yeah, bet you wish you never came back, especially since Sarah is going out with Axel now.
Oh, ooh, I love me some drama. This is my favorite part of an 80s movie. Like, the drama goes crazy. It's so random. It doesn't pertain to anything, but I'm here and I'm listening.
And you're sad.
Yeah.
So there's a small awkward beat where the group gets quiet before TJ's like, I don't give a damn. Okay, TJ, I'm sure you don't give a damn.
Right.
But the fellas are ready to head into town for the evening, so off they go. Now, they drive with no concern for human life, by the way, just swerving everywhere. Like, their line of cars going down Main Street, like, on both sides of the road. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if that was an 80s thing or if that's just it was wild.
Genuinely, yes. Like, I feel like it's lame these days to drive crazy. It's like, okay, what, you're just, you don't mind if you kill someone? Like, okay. But I still remember, like, Grease, you know, the movie Grease in, like, 1978, and, like, the cool guys are always, like, doing crazy stuff with their cars. And literally, me as a 12-year-old was like, they're so cool. So I'm happy we grew out of that as a society.
Yes. Okay, you're so right. I do think this was like a thing that they show a lot in movies back then. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. We pass a sign on our way in. Welcome to Valentine Bluffs, the little town with a big heart.
Aww.
With an arrow pointing to a large light-up heart on the sign. It's like a nice welcome to the town sign. It's very cute.
Beautiful.
Reaching what appears to be Main Street, we can see that we are decked out for Valentine's Day. We've got red, pink, and white garland that wraps the telephone poles, heart banners across the street back and forth. There's also a large banner that says something about a big Valentine's dance.
Ooh.
Exciting.
I already can smell the tea. Right? You know what I mean?
What flavor is it?
Well, I have to say vanilla, just because I can smell vanilla and I'm drinking a vanilla steamer.
So, okay, vanilla tea. Wait, that sounds boring. Right? That sounds boring, though. wait. I don't want vanilla tea.
Yeah, it's pistachio.
No, I think it should be like a spicy chai so that it's like spicy tea, right?
That's smart. I don't know why I went pistachio.
That was a choice that you made, and
Yeah.
You know, it's fine. Anyway. This is going to be a great episode.
Yeah.
So the guys park their cars and barge into a room where a bunch of girls are putting up Valentine's decor. They all kind of roll their eyes a little because, my lord, do these guys make an entrance. Mm. But they are happy to see their booze after all. We have Axel and Sarah, Hollis and Patty. And then I wrote X and Y because I think I was supposed to figure out who they were. And I don't think
not it was important.
They weren't important enough to really. Okay, wait.
Hollis
matter.
And Sally?
Patty.
Patty.
Now, TJ's just kind of watching from the sidelines with his beer, and Sarah notices and gets kind of uncomfy. This love triangle about to cause a lot of tension up in here. You know what I mean?
I love to see it.
Mm-hmm. So this guy, Howard, he asks Gretchen to be his date to the dance, and Gretchen is like, hell no. Howard is definitely, like, he's the most over-the-top class clown, Richie Tozier, comedic relief guy of this movie.
Yeah, you gotta have it.
He's, like, everything he says is just over-the-top comedy, and he's that guy. But everyone's having a great time getting ready for the dance, and down on Main Street, a man and a woman walk briskly down the road. Mabel, this is the best thing that's happened to this town in years, the man says. Mabel walks beside him with a box of decorations as this man, the mayor, compliments her decorating committee on a job well done. She's excited that the town is hosting its first Valentine's dance in 20 years, and at the mention of this, the mayor's face falls a bit, and he encourages Mabel to not emphasize that part too much.
So what happened 20 years ago?
Right. Mabel and the mayor approach the hall where all the kids are decorating, and as Mabel goes to open the door, Howard falls forward out the doorway, screaming, covered in red paint. He thinks it's hilarious, but he nearly scares Mabel to death as she falls down the stairs, dropping all of her decorations. Yes. And the mayor does not find this funny. He's like, go help her up and help her with the decorations. But funnily enough, Mabel's actually kind of laughing. She kind of found it funny. So
better than me.
For real. The mayor heads on into the party room, wondering what is going on in here. At the sight of the mayor, TJ decides he's going to try and slink out the door, but the mayor sees him and asks where he's going. TJ just says he always leaves at this time of day for, quote, another beer and a real good nose pick.
What?
He heads out I don't know. It's just what he says in this moment. We go, okay.
Got it.
He just heads out the door, and Axel comments that he doesn't think TJ enjoys being back in the mine very much. That's too bad, the mayor states. Not his fault that TJ couldn't make it out on his own on the West Coast. But now that he's back here, he says, he's my son, and he's working the mine.
Ooh,
more tea. Okay.
Okay, I'm – okay. Is this one of those where I should bother to try and guess who the killer is, or is it just not that kind of movie?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. I got to go with the mayor.
Mm.
Yes.
The chief walks in now. That's what they call the police officer this whole movie. So the chief walks in and he tells the mayor that they've got their meeting soon and should head on out. So they do. But Howard remembers something. There was a package left for the mayor, a heart-shaped chocolate box. So he runs it out to him real quick. The mayor asks who it's from, but they don't know. It was left in the room before any of them arrived. The mayor's just excited to have some chocolate, so he hops in the cruiser with the chief, and off they head to their meeting. On the car ride there, the mayor decides he's got to have some of this chocolate, of course. Mm-hmm. Upon opening the box, he discovers a note that reads, "From the heart comes a warning filled with bloody good cheer. Remember what happened as the 14th draws near."
Okay.
It kind of feels like we're doing the mean one again, and it's like a little triggering, but...
You're right. You're right. Oh, boy.
He's filled with immediate panic as he whips open the box to find a bloody human heart.
We're there already. I was hoping we would get that eventually, but wow, right off the bat. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're starting strong.
"It can't be happening again," he says, more disappointed than frightened, to be honest. This discovery causes the sheriff to flip on his sirens and they turn that baby around. That night... The kids, I call them kids. I don't think they're in school, but they're like very much the kids of the town, like, you know.
Right. Like college.
Yeah.
But not in college.
Right. They act like high schoolers, but I think, I don't know. It's hard to, they're just young people.
It is always hard to tell in an 80s movie.
Exactly. They're all hanging out at a local bar, and the bartender starts ranting about the danger approaching as Valentine's Day is just around the corner. Everyone's just kind of like, here he goes again. How many times is he going to tell this story? Well, at least once more for us right now.
Perfect.
"It all started 20 years ago," he begins. And as he narrates the story, we flash back those 20 years and watch it all unfold. "It was the night of the Valentine's Day dance, a tradition that had been going on for over 100 years. Everyone was there. Well, everyone except 7 miners who were over at the mines, 2 supervisors up top and 5 down in the mine." Mm-hmm. Now, these 2 supervisors really wanted to get to the party, so they just left the miners there, failing to check the levels of methane in the tunnels below.
Oh, my God. Mm. That's crazy.
That's insane.
For a Valentine's Day party?
Yeah, they were really hype about it.
Okay.
Boom. Explosion erupts down in the mine, burying the 5 miners alive. There were 6 weeks spent looking for the bodies of the miners, and believe it or not, one was found alive. "I was the one who found him," the bartender says.
Oh.
Harry Warden was the name of the miner who he found, and Harry had gone a little crazy down here over the past 6 weeks.
Yeah.
They actually paint part of his insanity in the fact that he ate the bodies of the other miners. But, like, would that actually be super crazy? Am I, like, okay, maybe I sound insane.
I don't think that... You have to be insane to decide to do that.
Right.
I think it's like survival instinct, but I think doing that could cause like mental trauma and insanity just experiencing that.
Right. That's what I see. Like, that's the way I would think. I don't know. I feel like the way they paint it in the movie, it's like, and then he ate people. And
I'm sure.
Like, well, I think he did that for survival, but that doesn't really matter. Well, Harry Warden went to the state mental hospital for a year, but... Mm-hmm. On the 1-year anniversary of the explosion,
he escaped.
Harry Warden came back to town and killed the 2 supervisors who had left him and the other miners down there.
Oh.
Mm.
Okay, this is throwing me off now. Okay.
He stabbed them in the chest with his pickaxe before cutting out their hearts and putting them in those Valentine's candy boxes. He left those boxes at the Valentine's dance along with a note saying that the town is to never have another Valentine's dance ever again.
Oh my God. So I wouldn't. So why are we having a Valentine? Like 20 years isn't enough. Like where is Harry? Is he dead? We have to wait like 100 years. And even then, just for the respect of Harry and the trauma he endured, I'd be like, hey, let's not do that again.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Okay. Wait. So do we know, is Harry still alive?
So legend has it that Harry Warden comes back to town every February 14th. Stalking around with his bloody pickaxe, waiting to kill anyone who does not heed his warnings.
Right.
"It could be you," the bartender says, pointing to someone random in the bar, bringing us back to present day. He is real serious about this story and tells everyone that they should really think twice about having this party on Saturday.
Well, yeah.
But all the youngins in the bar just laugh at the crazy old man and go back to their business.
You know what?
What?
Caitlin?
What?
What? Wait, sorry.
Don't do that. That's the scariest thing you've ever done to me. I turned around so fast. I thought there was someone behind me.
I was just thinking. My eyes went up because I was thinking, but Caitlin thought that I was seeing something behind her.
It's not funny.
No, so this is so crazy because this episode is coming out on February 12th, and it's currently February 12th, and it's talking about like Valentine's Day is on Saturday, which it is this year as well.
Oh, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
I love this.
I love when this happens. This happens a lot for us. It's kind of odd.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's nobody behind me ready to kill me.
No, you're fine.
What's the actual warning word for if somebody's behind me? Because Caitlin is apparently...
I'll say pistachio.
Okay, pistachio.
Yeah.
So just let me know if there's someone behind me by saying pistachio.
Perfect. Okay.
You'll be sorry you didn't listen to me, the bartender says with some contempt. The majority of our group sits at a table together, and while they sing a song about one of the waitresses being a Valentine virgin, Sarah is making some eyes with TJ, who stands alone against a wall.
Well, girl, go back to him then.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just go back to him. Like, what are you doing with Axel then? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
She excuses herself from Axel and goes over to see him. She just wants to remind TJ that it's his own fault.
Oh.
He owns up to that, so Sarah asks him why he can't just accept things the way they are. Because I don't like the way things are, he responds before marching off, which, fair, but something else going on there.
Well, right. Okay, maybe he did something bad and she still is, like, into him, but she's like, well, I can't be with someone who did that. It could be complicated.
Mm-hmm. Let's check in with our favorite dynamic duo, the sheriff and the mayor. Mm-hmm. So... the sheriff's just gotten off the phone with what seems to be the mental hospital.
He's
frustrated, though, because the normal staff isn't in right now, and the night nurse doesn't know what he's talking about. Even the best. Sounds like they want to check on the status of Harry Warden, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we're at the coroner's office because we brought the heart there, and it's confirmed that this is a real human heart. That of a 30-ish... year old woman.
Okay.
So even though they don't have their solid proof, they believe that it can't be anyone else. Harry Warden must be back in town. We cut away to a pair of miner's boots stalking through some grass, and we switch to the wearer's POV. The sound of a respirator can be heard.
I know it's hot in there. You can take it off. Take it off now. It's been a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to do... Everyone knows who you are. Well, that's the thing is... I'm assuming, I'm hoping kind of that it's not really Harry.
Right. Now, this individual peers through the windows of Mabel's laundromat, which is, of course, decked out in Valentine's Day decor.
Mm-hmm.
Mabel's inside cleaning up and such, and when she makes her way into a back room, the miner walks inside. They drop a heart-shaped candy box on the counter and slowly slink back into a secluded corner of the room. Mabel comes back out in the main area with a very clearly empty mug of tea in her hand. How hard is it to just put some water in there? Like, it really pisses me off. Like, it's so maddening.
She's one of those little things. Don't pretend.
No, and so you can hear the clink of the spoon. And I'm like, there's nothing in the mug.
Yeah.
It makes me so mad. Anyway.
It's not necessary to do it if you're not going to do it, you know?
Right. Like, I just also, like, how hard is it to just put some water in there? I will never understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But Mabel, she catches a glimpse of the box on the counter and excitedly makes her way over to it. She laughs to herself. I wonder who sent this, she asks aloud. She goes ahead and opens the box. Inside, a note reads, roses are red, violets are blue, one is dead, and so are you. Mabel's face falls. I wanted the note to say, violets are blue, one is dead, I'm right behind you, but it didn't.
Ooh, right behind you is great because you're dead. It's like, okay, well, what if I just run? Like, you're not even here.
The chief. I was like really ready for it to be like, I'm right behind you. And it doesn't matter. Yeah. But Mabel's face falls as the lights turn off and the miner comes at her from behind. She screams and begins to back away from the miner, and she's actually passing like a row of washing machines, and she opens the door of each as she passes, but obviously the miner's just like walking through them and slamming them shut as he follows her. Get away, Mabel yells. She tries to make a run for it into the back room, but the miner grabs her head from behind and throws her to the floor. The pickaxe is raised up into the air over Mabel, and we cut away hearing a lovely, lovely squishy sound. Mm-hmm. This is what probably some of those minutes, by the way, because it just kind of cuts away off of her death. So like,
Oh, yeah, you know what I mean? Right. I bet it is. Yeah.
But this is our first act check-in, which is very exciting. And I have three questions for you.
Okay. I'm loving the vibe of this so far. Yeah. I've missed our little 80s episodes. I know.
No, this one's really fun. So 1A, your question is, would you continue to heed the warnings and not throw the Valentine's dance?
100%. And I would move out of the town that decided to do that. Why are we doing that? No, 100. Okay, well, you know what? I'll give it a 99% because it's not very easy to just up and move if your town's going to be stupid. Mm. But I would go, at the very least, go stay. I'll go on a trip or go stay with someone in a different town because I don't want him to think that I'm celebrating Valentine's Day. I don't even like it that much.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cassie just called me stupid with her whole chest.
Caitlin, why?
I give myself a 54 because I don't like, I don't think I would feel the need to throw a Valentine's dance, but if the opportunity came up, I'd be like, yeah, that was 20 years ago. Like, it's fine.
No.
Yeah.
20 years is not very long ago. And he's still in that insane asylum or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's just, we've learned recently. I feel like more recently, we've really learned the difference between the two of us. Cassie's actually careful and takes care of herself. And I'm like, why the fuck not? Yeah. Let's go.
These answers do check out.
So 1B, sorry for the weird wording, everyone. Mm-hmm. Do you not decorate your laundromat for Valentine's Day? Like, are you putting those decorations up?
So 100% not.
Okay.
100% not. I am not celebrating Valentine's Day in a town with this lore. Mm-hmm. It's along the same principle as the first question.
Sure. I give myself a 90 here because even though I'd go to the dance, I don't care that much about Valentine's Day where I'd be like putting hearts up on my laundromat.
It'd be interesting if you asked that in regard to Christmas because it would be like a bigger blow to me to not be able to decorate for Christmas.
We did that with the mean one. That was the mean one.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That one, a little different because it's like you don't really think that it's it's just legend, whereas this seems to be rooted in like a real thing that happened. So I would be more scared and like more likely to think, should I or should I not? But yeah, like you said, Valentine's Day, like I don't care about it enough either to struggle with that decision.
Sure. This question, 1C, is a little tricky just because of the nature of the scene. And this is a deadly question, which means it weighs more. Do you think you would be able to escape the miner in the laundromat? I think it's a little hard given that it's very quick and simple.
Mm-hmm.
I gave myself a 24 because he kind of corners her to the back room and then like she goes to go into the back room and he just like grabs her. There's just not really anywhere to go. But she could have made a run for the front door on the other side. Like she could have looped around.
When she there's a heart in this one as well or just the note?
I don't even think she gets as far to check for, like, it's just that she just reads the note.
Oh, the note is on top of it before she opens it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to keep that in mind because if I see a note on that, I'm going to be like, I'm going to immediately be like, what the fuck?
Yep.
But she doesn't know that what happened with the mayor. Was it the mayor or the chief?
Yeah, she doesn't know.
She doesn't know that, so she doesn't really know. Okay. I do have to go low as well. I do. I'm just going to go 20s as well. Mm-hmm. I'll go 25.
Beautiful. She had to one-up me, guys. She had to one-up me.
Yeah, I did.
Whoa. Okay, there was some sass in that. I was not prepared. So let's charge on into act two. In this next scene, I watched it about 3 times. I still don't really know what they're doing. But 3 guys, Howard, Hollis, and an unnamed guy, even the subtitles call him Man, they're like heating up food on the engine of a car in a junkyard. Is this a thing?
What? Yeah. Doing what? No, that's not a thing. Why do you want to eat like gas fumes in your burger?
and it's like there are like these tin foil packaged things. Oh, and they, it's meat. And they're heating. I don't know. It's weird, but they're doing that.
That's interesting. Okay.
But anyway, Axel sits in another car away from the group, and he's just playing his harmonica. And suddenly he gets jump scared by TJ coming out of nowhere, offering him a bottle of liquor, which he takes a swig of. Guess we've got ourselves a problem, TJ says. Axel's like, I guess so. So TJ asks what they're going to do about it. Well, there ain't nothing to do about it, Axel responds. He lets TJ know that he doesn't intend on backing off for him. Sarah chose him now. And TJ was the one who left with no warning and didn't tell them where he was going.
Okay.
So Axel warns TJ to stay away from Sarah.
Well, TJ, you can't do that because you left.
Mm-hmm. We both know who Sarah really wants, TJ retorts. The guys established that, yeah, they're going to continue to have an issue. They both want Sarah and neither wants to back down. So they just kind of leave it at like, okay, yep, we have a problem.
Like, young people are so stupid. Right? Like, so sorry to everyone under like 23. But even then, it's just like some people don't grow out of it too, where it's like, I feel like if I was Axel, I wouldn't even want to be with Sarah. Like, are you really that in love with her? Probably not. And I feel like he just wants to be with her to like have her rather than to like actually care for her. And why I'm not going to get involved with someone with a messy ex who they care about but had to leave because their ex was messy and left them first. Like, I'm not going to – like, guys, it's not worth it. Let's just all go home with our separate boxes of chocolate and watch some TV.
Yes, this is now a relationship advice podcast. Welcome. Oh, my gosh. I'm kidding. Please don't.
No, my mind immediately flashed to Patreon bonus up.
Not that we have a Patreon or anything, but...
No, we don't.
If we did. Anyway, so the next day is Friday, February 13th. So Friday the 13th. Interesting. Spooky. We love that. And the chief is on the phone with the mental hospital again, trying to get answers about where the hell Harry Warden is. And of course, the mayor's there because they're besties. So... the woman on the other line insists that she has no records of a Harry Warden at the moment.
What?
And if there were any old records, they'd be in the microfilms and central file, which would take a few days to get to. The chief is obviously, like, very frustrated. He emphasizes the importance of this and says he'll be waiting for her call on those files. And he hangs up the phone.
I'm assuming this is still the why do I want to say cast? That is not... what do you call... staff! Okay, oh. I'm...
same like cast, so still working at the mental hospital.
That would be a problem. Okay. No, I'm in movie mode. No, there's a regular staff that he's used to dealing with and they're just still not there and the people there just don't know what's going on and are like, there's no file.
I think it is the regular staff. And
they don't know. And they don't know. So did you work here last year when I'm sure he checked? Okay. Okay, this is fine. Yeah. I don't want it to be Harry.
Okay. So the mayor insists that based on this information, or lack thereof, it has to be Harry Warden, and they need to cancel the dance.
Yeah.
Which I think is a fair conclusion to come to.
Yeah.
Sarah and Patty are walking down the sidewalk together, and Patty is grilling Sarah on which guy she wants. Sarah kind of wants them both, but she's also fed up with their behavior. She's not even sure she wants to go to the dance at all, but Patty insists that she has to come. She can just hang out with her and Hollis. Side note, I do love Patty. She's has a very fun energy. Like, I would definitely spend a night out on the town with Patty. She seems cool.
That's good to have in an 80s movie because it's easy to just like not like any of the characters. You got to have one.
So now the chief pulls up to Mabel's laundromat looking for her. He wants to talk to her about the dance. He's calling around the place, but she doesn't seem to be around. And as the chief looks around, he notices that all the heart decorations in the place seem to have been flipped upside down. How strange is that?
Like a cross.
Whoa.
Creepy. You know? Yeah.
He also smells something funny. He sniffs the air a few times and heads over to the only running dryer in the place.
Oh my God, her head is in there.
He opens it up and pulls out some of the laundry, giving it a sniff. Seems okay.
Oh.
Suddenly, the adjacent dryer door swings open and out falls Mabel's burned and bloody corpse.
What? Her entire body?
Yes, her whole body's in there. Don't ask me how.
Oh my God, what a little woman.
The way it falls out doesn't make sense, but, you know, we just let it happen. It's like the fridge in Slumber Party Massacre. Do you remember that?
I completely forgot, but yes, it's immediately coming back to me. That was so funny.
Oh, and I also did write, if this shot wasn't cut from the film, I'd be curious to see the stuff that was. Because it is pretty nasty. Her, like, completely burned and bloody corpse falling out. So I'm like, okay, was it just more of this and there was too much of it? Or does it get worse?
I bet my guess is that they had more of an issue of the during than the aftermath.
Maybe that's it, yeah. They need to release all 9 of those minutes. Like, I need to see them.
Yeah.
Sometime later, Mabel's body is being picked up by the coroners, and the chief and the mayor stand off to the side in dismay. This is just like it was 20 years ago. The mayor encourages the chief to call in Granville, but the chief doesn't want to do that yet. It'll just incite more panic, and they'll have cops crawling all over the place. Yeah.
That's so annoying. It's giving Sleepaway Camp, another 80s movie, where they were like, it'll make the camp look bad. We can't do that. Yeah. Oh, I hate it when we have a character like this.
Yes. So he doesn't want any help yet, at least. But before the coroners can take Mabel's body, he reminds them, Mabel died of a heart attack. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got them in on the lie, too.
Mm-hmm.
The chief takes one last look at Mabel's body and sees a note shoved into her chest cavity. It reads, "It happened once, it happened twice, cancel the dance, or it will happen thrice."
Okay.
That's it. The mayor insists the dance needs to be canceled. All the decor needs to be taken down and the hall needs to be locked up so no one tries to throw a party. The chief follows the mayor's orders and heads on over to lock up Union Hall. There's a group of kids outside with more decor for the dance, and the chief has to let them in on the bad news that the dance is now canceled. His reasoning is it was Mabel's dance. It'd be disrespectful, and there'll be no other parties allowed either.
Right. Mm-hmm. They won't be throwing any party because they're mad about this being canceled. They won't be doing that.
No, not at all. Next, we're thrown into a moment where TJ is herding Sarah into the passenger seat of his car. Like, we're just here now.
Okay.
"No, TJ, I don't want to go with you," Sarah yells playfully, but we can tell she's, like, okay with it. You know, she's like, no.
Yeah.
TJ gets in the driver's side of the car, and the two of them drive off. They arrive at a vacant spot near the water, where they get out, and they're going to have a little heart-to-heart moment here. "Remember this spot?" TJ asks. "Of course I remember this spot," Sarah replies. They walk along the water and Sarah questions TJ. "Why didn't you call or write? Why did you go away and not tell anyone about it?" TJ says that he wanted to call, but he couldn't. He was struggling out there. He apologizes profusely and tells Sarah that he loves her and he wants her back.
Okay, do we know why? Do we ever get a reason why he went out to the West Coast? Was it like, when people do that in movies, I assume they like try to make it in Hollywood.
I think it was something of that nature because there is a comment from the mayor earlier where he says something like not my fault he couldn't, you know, make it out there or whatever.
Right. Yeah. But I would take it that way.
Yeah. It seems like that, but they don't ever like explicitly say.
Okay. Well, TJ, I'm going to have the headcanon that you would have rather had fame than Sarah, but go ahead and try to sweet talk her. I'm sure she loves it.
Mm-hmm. Sarah's like, "You left me here. I didn't know if you'd ever come back." But then she kisses him anyway. And I'm like, no. Like, couldn't be me. Ooh. You leave me without saying anything? That's not happening.
Yeah. Uh-uh. People like me are gone forever.
Yes.
When you say goodbye.
Snaps. Yes. We love that. Later that night, TJ runs into Axel at the bar where we were earlier. And Axel's like, "You seen Sarah?" And TJ goes, "It's not my turn to watch after her." And he winks.
Oh my God. Ew.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. Like, they do not care about her.
No. And it's crazy that we cut from that, right, to Sarah walking home alone in the dark.
Okay. And
I'm like, neither of you were there.
Yeah, no.
To walk her home. I don't know. It makes me angry, but
they could not care less. Yeah.
No, they could not. And Sarah's walking along and she's like muttering to herself a bit about what just happened, you know, with TJ. "How am I going to tell Axel?" she asks herself. And as she's walking, she keeps looking behind her like she's scared.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, she looks behind her, and when she turns back around to the front, she's met face to face with a bright light.
Oh.
It's the chief shining a light in her face. He's just on his patrol and making sure she's all right. And she says that she is. We're right outside her house anyway, so she just kind of heads inside.
Okay, a little fake out.
Back at the bar, the group is talking about their disappointment due to the cancellation of the Valentine's dance. But Howard has a better idea. Why don't we just have a Valentine's party instead?
Well, yes. Of course it's freaking Howard, too, that comes up with that.
Leave it to Howard. The group loves this idea, but where are they going to have it? The chief's keeping an eye out for parties. Well, genius idea incoming. Let's have it in the mine, TJ suggests. Wait, before you jump to where I think you're jumping to, I was like probably in the same headspace as you. It's not like in the mine. It's like they have a rec room.
Are you joking? Why would he say in the mine?
Yeah. So it's like, because I also was like, we're going to have a party in the mine?
Still stupid, because why are we throwing a party?
Right.
But okay. Yeah. We're not going to have a cave-in in the third act.
So everyone but Hollis and Axel love this idea, because Hollis is very rational. He seems to be the level-headed guy of the group. Hollis and Patty are the two like that you really, really like in this movie.
Okay, yeah.
They got a rec room over there at the mine, TJ reminds them. It'd be perfect. The bartender overhears all this talk, and he does not like the sound of this. Mm-hmm. Forget about having a party at all tomorrow night, or you'll be sorry. TJ's like, calm down. Let go of that silly old legend. We're having a party, and you better not tell anyone. The bartender hits him with the, don't say I didn't warn you.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, the bartender stalks around the mine late at night with a bottle of liquor and a pickaxe, and he's looking around all suspiciously. He breaks into some random door, and he goes inside. Damn, kids, I'll show them, he mutters to himself. Now, this guy, he's ringing up a fake miner in the doorway. So when the kids open the door, this like miner outfit is going to swing a pickaxe up. It's going to get him real good. And he's really excited about it.
You know what? He's kind of so me.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I'm annoyed with these kids too. Like, let me teach you a lesson. But yeah. I would be too scared to go there alone and set it up, so...
That's fair, because he seems to like really believe in the
yeah, that would be me. I'd be like, don't do it, you idiots. Like, what are you doing?
He is proud of his contraption and he's testing it. He does it a couple times, kind of laughing a little maniacally, and he's had his fun. So he turns to walk away, but he stops when he hears some creaking sounds coming from the doorway where he's
no, you don't understand. Dummy. He respects you. No, yeah, right. You can't die. That's against the rules, because that means I die.
Ooh, shit.
You know?
Right. He turns around and he opens that door once more.
Mm-hmm.
This time, the same exact motion happens, but now it's the real miner. The pickaxe is swung in that upward motion and it hits the bartender right in the stomach.
Ooh, yeah.
So RIP, Mr. Bartender.
Oh, man.
I know. It's Valentine's Day now. Yay. And we're just going to head right into the party. Like,
okay.
We're jumping right into that party. And all the young people show up to the rec room at the mine carrying beers, food, and decorations. They are hype. At the police station, the chief asks an officer, Ben, if anything's been called in tonight. And Ben's like, nope, been real quiet here. So the chief's relieved until Ben remembers that someone left something for him. A heart-shaped box.
Yep.
It sits wrapped in plastic on the table in front of the chief, and he lets out a concerned, oh my God. The chief asks Ben to go grab him a coffee so he can open this package in peace. He slowly removes the cover from the box to find... chocolates! Yay! Oh. Chocolate! And he looks at the card, which says, be my Valentine from Mabel. Oh, Satch. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, that is really... Wow, a gift from the dead.
I know.
That's sad. That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, the party is raging.
Anyways, party time!
Party time! So there's music, beer, kissing, games, and just honestly like a lot of tomfoolery. If you've ever seen a party... in an 80s movie, you yeah. know what's going on. So Johnny and Sylvia, two characters that we don't really know much about. They're just kind of here now. They sneak off into a back room to do who to knows what. Wink, wink. Yeah. You know?
You have to have a sex death.
Yep. Always. Yeah. One of the younger guys says he's got the munchies. So he's going to wander off to find food, which it's so funny to put these two back to back. Like,
I know.
Leaving for sex, leaving for food.
Yeah. Where would I be?
Which one am I? He heads into a dark, empty kitchen where he finds a large pot boiling on the stove with hot dogs in it. And he gets real excited about these hot dogs. So
okay, very Carrie Berry coated.
Oh, Carrie Berry. Actually, so real. This would be Carrie, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So he flips his tie over his shoulder, picks up the tongs. Before he can grab himself a delicious hot dog, a large gloved hand grabs the back of his head. Mm. The young hot dog enjoyer has enough time to scream, "No, who is that?" before the minor man slams his face down into the boiling water.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
Mm-hmm. And this is, again, we don't know how long because it cuts away quickly. So these have got to be the minutes. Yeah. So back at the station, Ben and the chief hear some barking and growling coming from outside. "What the hell is that?" the chief asks, making his way for the door with Ben following behind. On the front stoop sits a bloody heart-shaped box. Dogs surround it, poking around the package. The chief shoos the dogs away and grabs for the note. "You didn't stop the party," it reads. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's like pissed off because he really tried to make sure there would be no parties today.
Right.
Down at the mine, the party continues on and Axel starts getting handsy with Sarah, who asks him to stop. And he doesn't, so she really, like, fights back.
Ooh.
TJ stands nearby and pipes up. "Guess you better back off there, Axel," he says. Axel tells TJ that he needs to back off. He and Sarah had been doing fine before TJ showed up, and clearly Sarah wants nothing to do with TJ.
Clearly.
Right? "Do you mind? I have my own mouth, thank you," Sarah chimes in, and I'm like, yes, girl. Thank for you. Real. They keep
we need a line like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
"Then why don't you use it?" TJ says. "Tell him." Axel obviously is like, "Tell me what?" Mm-hmm. So TJ tells him, "She wants to come back with me." Sarah's really pissed now. She's like, "Why don't you both just back off?"
Yeah.
Okay. And she just storms off. And I'm like, yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Spicy chai.
Of course, the men are going to be men. And Axel decides to punch TJ in the face.
Okay, yeah.
And Hollis has to step in and break them apart. And like in complete frustration, Axel grabs a beer and he goes outside. TJ, on the other hand, goes over to Sarah and apologizes. But Sarah asks him to please just leave her alone. The energy in the room's obviously tense and awkward, but don't worry, Howard is there to make a joke and get everyone laughing again. Remember Johnny and Sylvia?
Oh, it's time.
They're in the locker room where they've pushed two benches together, creating a bed of sorts where they can make out. And okay. Sylvia looks up at the ceiling, asking how they get, quote, those down. And Johnny tells her to just pull the rope, and she does. Some coveralls come falling from the ceiling and, like, land on them, like, still hung up on a hook, but, like, they come down and hang there.
Mm-hmm.
And they both kind of laugh, and Sylvia asks, "You know what we need?" "Yeah, I got one right here," Johnny says, reaching into his pocket.
No. No. What you guys need is a bedroom, not a locker room.
Oh, just you wait, girly.
Okay.
So, no, I meant a couple of beers, Sylvia giggles.
Oh.
You and Johnny are the same.
I wasn't like, that's kind of sad though. What do you need? You need a couple beers. Maybe you shouldn't be doing this then, girl.
Yeah, right? Right? Oh, Johnny says before offering to go grab some beers, leaving Sylvia behind in their makeshift bed. He heads into the kitchen where two girls are getting some hot dogs from the giant boiling pot.
Oh, good.
Using the tongs, one of the girls pulls out something nasty from the pot and holds it up. Ugh, what is this? Johnny laughs. Ugh, one of those idiots really thinks he's funny. Now, this object looks what I guess a boiled heart would look like. It's completely browned and doesn't really look like a heart, but it's the same shape. So I think that's what they're going for here.
Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So Johnny opens the fridge and grabs a pack of beers. Why do I mime everything? Like, I don't feel, I'm like opening the fridge over here.
No,
like,
I do that. I do that as well. You are doing it extra today.
I don't know why I am.
But I enjoy it.
I do it when I write the scripts too. When I need to come up with a word, I'll just do the action over and over. I'm like, what is this called?
Like, that's so funny. No, half the time, that's so funny because I often am stuck on like a specific word I'm trying to think of. And then what happens is I try to Google like, what is the word that means this? But then I end up thinking of the word and then I Google what is blank? And then I'm like, wait, that is the word. Anyways.
We're having a good time. Johnny opens the fridge and grabs for a pack of beers without actually looking. But we, the audience, see a dead body in the fridge. Now, this one actually kind of does make sense because it's one of those cafeteria fridges, like those big silver ones.
Okay, yes.
And the body's just kind of sitting on that bottom area of the fridge.
Yeah,
and,
I'll take it.
Yeah. His face is kind of burned and melty looking. It's really not super pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But in the locker room, Cynthia's gotten all cozy while waiting for John. But suddenly, some of the shower heads turn on. And this frightens Cynthia. John, she calls out. If you're trying to scare me, it's working. Minor coveralls start dropping from the ceiling like flies. They fall all around Cynthia as she tries to make her way out of the locker room. One of the coverall hooks falls down, and instead of holding the coveralls, the dead body of the bartender hangs by his neck.
Oh, that's fun.
Sylvia screams and turns around only to face the miner himself.
Yeah.
He picks Sylvia up by her head and starts to walk for the showers, and we cut away. So we have a little time jump here, and now Johnny's making his way back into the locker room with the beers.
Right.
Sorry I took so long, babe, he says before realizing his babe is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Then he realizes the showers are running. He gets excited.
Of course.
All right, he says, walking on over, and he starts unbuttoning his shirt on the way. But what he sees in there is not quite what he was expecting.
Yeah.
Sylvia's head has been skewered onto one of the shower heads, so like the water's coming out of her mouth.
Oh, I love that.
I know.
I think, yeah, that makes sense. That could be possible. That's crazy. Yeah.
Because, like, in the previous scene, you see, like, that he looks like he's going to, like, put her head on a pole. So I think he took the shower head off so that it was just, like, a pipe and then, like, shoved it on and then just did that. And we don't really actually get to see this either. It's very much, like, a side shot from the back. So you just kind of see, a blurry silhouette of her head with water coming out.
Okay, yeah.
So we don't, like, see it head on, but it's implied. And I also thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's fun. It's creative.
And this is our second act check-in.
Ooh, this is a hard killer to beat.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where there's not a lot of opportunity to do too much, I think.
Right.
But we have 5 questions for this act. So 2A, all of your friends are going to the party. Do you skip out?
Yeah, I won't be too cocky with a 100 here, but I think I would probably – okay, I'm trying to think. All my friends. So I have 3 friends. they were all in town and wanted to go to this party, I'd probably – wait, how is it worded? Yes, I would be a good 72% here.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. I gave myself a 2.
Yes.
Because I would go to the party.
Yes, I see that.
Catch me at the party.
Yep.
Do you, as the bartender, ignore the kids' plans as opposed to pranking them?
Well, I kind of touched on this where the only reason I wouldn't prank them is because I'd be afraid to go out there alone.
Yep.
I could convince someone to come with me and then we'd probably both end up dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's an option here and that's a likely thing because I would want to prank these kids, but I just wouldn't do it alone. So I'm going to slip under 50 and I'll go like 46%.
Okay. I put 94 because, I mean, that makes sense. Like, yeah. I'm not doing that. It also just hit me that we didn't average our first act.
Oh, I figured we were just – oh, yeah, we always do it.
I don't know why.
I noticed and I was like, wait, we always average at the end, but that's just not the truth.
But we can talk about that when we get to the end of these questions. 2, why did I go A, B, D? Jesus Christ. What is wrong with me? 2C, do you ignore your hunger at the party?
Okay, that's rude. Like, you, that's targeted. Like,
and it's a deadly question, by the way.
You absolutely knew what you were doing with that question.
Well, but it was true.
Because, do I ignore my hunger? 0%. Because you know the only reason why I am 72% going to the party is for the hot dogs.
It's for the hot dogs. I mean, I gave myself a 1, so.
Yeah, I just like, know.
Of course.
I just know. Well, actually, you know what? TMI, I'm an IBS girly and it can be triggered by nerves. I'd probably be nervous and I don't know if I'd really want to eat, but just for vibes, I'm not going to use that excuse.
Okay. See, because like it makes it sound so much worse that way. Like, because obviously, you know, I want to ask, do you go get a hot dog?
Yes.
But I have to reverse it. So it's, do you ignore your hunger?
Are you capable of that, Cassie?
No. And yes, that is a deadly question, unfortunately, oh, for God. Us. 2D. Do you and your boo spend the party time with your friends as opposed to sneaking off and making out?
100%. I'm 100%ing that. Going to something like this, I'll just stay home with my boyfriend if I'm going to do that. I'm not going to go and then sneak off with him and make out. And I don't like PD. I'd be like, someone's going to walk in and I'd be embarrassed. Yeah. Like, I'm not into all that.
Yeah, no, I think, like, why would you come to the party to do that when you could just maybe do it after the party? So yeah. I give myself a 99, always leaving a little room.
Sure.
Who knows what. 2E, do you escape the locker room? I give myself a 63 for reference because she's very much intimidated by the coveralls falling from the ceiling, where, like, a coverall falls and she, like, backs and runs the other way. Whereas you could just maybe push through those and run for the door. So it's one of those situations where I'm like, he probably would have figured out a way to do it anyway.
I know.
I think I would have had a much better chance than her. So I went 63.
Him grabbing her by the head as well. Mm-hmm. It just confirms that, like, he is probably very fast and strong.
Yeah.
Which I am not. So.
Me too.
I'm actually going to give myself a 38.
Okay.
Here, I'm not feeling confident on that one.
Do you want to average act 1 and 2 right now just so we can?
Sure.
Why not?
Okay, so my first act weighted score came in at 55%.
Okay. I was 43.
Yeah. The deadly question really got me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I literally was 99 and 100 for two of those questions. Damn, and I'm still at a 55. Okay, and then my average score for act 2 is 37%.
Wow.
Very low for an act 2.
Yeah, it's funny because my score for both 1 and 2 was 43.
Oh.
I was exactly 43 on both of those. So we're going to head into act 3 where Cassie is immediately going to be pissed off after my very first line here. Okay, you ready? You ready?
Yeah, yeah.
Patty has a great idea. Let's go down into the mine.
So what I didn't want was a cave-in.
Mm, right.
So what I don't want is to be in the mine because I don't like dark, small places. And I know, okay, they're going to find a dead body.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a great time. So Hollis is like, huh, what? No way. But everyone else is in the circle thinks this is a great idea. And it really doesn't take too much convincing to get Hollis on board.
I really thought I could trust Patty too.
You did, didn't you?
Yeah.
You did. So Sarah, Howard, Hollis, Patty, Mike, and his girlfriend Harriet decide that they're going to ditch the party to go check out the mines.
Wait, not TJ?
Not TJ. So
TJ's next, looking suspicious. Okay.
So TJ sees them head out and he's like, whoa, Hollis, you can't take everyone down there. No woman allowed in the mine. Which is so fucking funny to me.
Okay.
Yeah. But Hollis insists that they're going to go down quick and they're going to come right back up. So
yeah, because let's just like do a hike for fun at that point. Mm. Like who does that?
Well, okay. I wonder if you'll change.
There's a lot of people that do hikes for fun, actually.
That's true.
Wait, why did I just
And why didn't I question it?
I like to hike in the summer. And I just have been so in my house lazy lately that I forgot that that's a thing that you can do for fun. But that's beside the point. Okay.
It's beside the point. But TJ, like, doesn't really give him any trouble. He just heads back inside.
Okay.
So everyone jumps into the mine carts. While Hollis grabs blankets and lanterns. We got mine cards.
Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo Club Penguin. Like, honestly.
Okay, so me now, I wouldn't want to ride in a mine cart, but me at 17, catch me in a mine cart.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you believe we're actually doing this, Sarah says?
I can.
Everyone, right? Everyone's really excited for their little adventure. And they crack open their beers and head on down 2,000 feet into the mine.
Okay.
Are you good?
Yes.
You okay with that?
That sounds lovely.
It sounds awesome, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the minecarts actually, they move at a pretty decent clip. Looks kind of fun in my opinion.
Yeah.
And after a little while, the cart comes to a stop and Hollis is like, hope you guys enjoyed yourselves because we're heading right back up. Mm-hmm. But of course, that's not true. Uh-uh. Mm-hmm. The group convinces Hollis to take them on a little tour of the mines. And again, Hollis gives in. He shows them around the tunnels, and when they reach the old engine room, get ready for this, Mike and Harriet share a look. Hey, Hollis, Mike says, we'll meet you over the main shaft in 10 minutes. Hollis is like, yeah, whatever, no longer, and he continues on with the rest of the group. So Mike and Harriet get cozy in the engine room, and
what do you mean, get cozy? It's cold and damp and dark and dirty.
Well, they do it anyway.
They can die.
Right? You're like, okay, no.
Yeah, bring in the killer.
So we cut away to one of our girlies up at the party screaming bloody murder. She's just discovered the dead body in the fridge. Mm-hmm. While she's freaking out about this, Johnny also comes running in to share what he just saw, Sylvia, in the shower rooms.
Mm-hmm.
The whole party starts panicking. It's Harry Warden. He's here, Axel screams. Everybody out. These people do not need to be asked twice. They all pile out of the door. And TJ tries to put in an emergency call, but the phone line's been cut. TJ instructs one of the other guys, Tommy, to get everyone out of here safely and to send the chief back here. He then grabs Axel and tells him that Sarah's down in the mine. Sarah and some others, they need to go down and get them. All the cars race away as Axel and TJ head to the mine elevator. I'll take the abandoned section, TJ says to Axel. You take the level above, and then we meet in the main shaft by the elevator. I hope to God we get there before Harry does. The two men jump in the itty-bitty elevator and begin their descent. Hollis is blissfully unaware of the chaos above as he continues his tour for Sarah, Patty, and Howard. They're walking around the oldest part of the mine now, a section they never really work in anymore, and at one point, we switch to a suspicious camera angle that's accompanied by heavy respirator breath.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's watching. The group is making their way back to the main shaft where they plan on heading back up, but uh-oh, Mike and Harriet aren't back yet.
Fuck them. Let's go.
I know. The group shares an annoyed look because they, like, all know what's happening right now. But suddenly, glass shatters from somewhere nearby.
Ooh.
Once, twice, three times. The miner is using his pickaxe to break light bulbs one by one in the tunnels.
Okay.
Hollis blames the sound on some rats, but Howard's a little more skeptical. But he follows Hollis and the others anyway, away from the noise. On the surface, Tommy's found the chief and he's filling him in on what's going on. You have to go to the mine, he says. We were having a party and Harry Warden started killing everybody. The chief demands that the kids get home before speeding off toward the mine. On his way over, he radios into the station and tells the guy there to round up every available man and meet him at the mine. There's some kids trapped down there and they're in danger. The main group down there in the mines have finally made it back to the mine carts and are calling for Mike and Harriet, who aren't responding. They all get jump scared when TJ appears around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
He informs everyone that Harry Warden is back. He killed Sylvia and Dave. I guess Dave was the name of the hot dog lover upstairs.
Aww.
And they have to get out of here fast because Harry Warden is likely down here somewhere. Howard is like, well, what about Mike and Harriet? Last Hollis knew, they were in the engine room. So TJ tells Hollis to check the main shaft while he takes Tunnel 6. Howard is to stay here with the girls. And it's funny because the girls are both disappointed, like, that they have to stay with Howard, and Howard is also terrified because he doesn't know what's going on, and he's like, don't leave me here, and the girls are like, this is what we get, no. Hollis finds Mike and Harriet pretty quickly, actually, where he expected to find them.
Yes.
In the engine room. Mike's limp body lays over Harriet.
Yes.
A large corkscrew of sorts is drilled into his back, likely straight through, and then into Harriet's stomach.
Ooh.
Which I kind of thought was, I hope it was intentional that it was like screw. I thought that was funny.
Yes. Yeah. I enjoy that. Okay.
Yes, I appreciate it. The sight of his friend's dead bodies freezes Hollis in place, but a sound elsewhere in the room breaks his trance. He whips around and a light shines right in his face. Oh. It's Harry Warden with his headlamp. He quickly holds up some kind of nail gun type thing and shoots Hollis twice in the head. Hollis stumbles into a corner and we cut away.
Bro, did you just say Harry?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just what we assume.
Oh, so the mask is still on.
The mask is still there.
Okay, I'm not gonna.
Yeah, you don't have
buy
to
buy in yet.
You don't have to take that for a fact.
Okay, I'm sad about Hollis.
I know Hollis is great.
I was hoping like he would Hollis. Make it.
Howard and the girls stand in silence, waiting for their friends to return. When Hollis's face pops up around a corner, covered in blood, It scares the hell out of everyone, and Hollis falls over dead onto the ground. Patty screams for her now dead boyfriend, R.I.P. Hollis, you were a real one.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, footsteps sound down the tunnel and the group looks up to see Harry Warden stalking toward them.
Mm-hmm.
Howard quickly jumps up and ushers the girls to move, but Patty is too distraught over Hollis. We need to move, Howard yells as he gets farther away. Sarah refuses to leave Patty's side and she yells at Howard for leaving them because Howard is straight up just walking into the tunnel by himself. Okay. Like, okay, buddy.
Yeah.
Harry Warden turns off the main tunnel and down another, but Sarah continues to prod Patty. They need to go. Eventually, with a good old slap across the face, she's able to convince her.
Oh.
Yeah. She does give her a nice little bitch slap.
Okay.
To, like, try to break her out of it, I guess.
Sure.
Patty is still distraught as Sarah tries to help her off the ground. The girls are suddenly jump scared by Axel now, who appears out of nowhere.
Okay, so I'm getting sus on Axel as well. Well, The framing, I don't know. The editing and framing, I don't see. But right. He's a little sus as well.
That's where I was at this point, was okay. Axel and TJ were my suses.
Right.
So, yeah. You know.
Okay.
Seeing Hollis's dead body, he quickly asks where the others are. We saw him, Sarah screams. Harry Warden is down here. Axel remains calm as he starts to guide the girls out of the mine. The whole way toward the elevator, Patty sobs and repeatedly tells the other two that she doesn't want to leave Hollis down here. She wants to go get him.
Mm.
But Axel and Sarah just continue to lead Patty away while trying to calm her down.
Mm-hmm.
Axel and the girls finally make it to a fork in the road. But like where they're down one fork and from the other fork they can hear footsteps, but there's a wall in between them kind of
okay.
vibes. So Axel picks up a plank of wood for defense and holds it ready for whoever rounds this corner. And as the silhouette comes into view, Axel swings the plank right into TJ. And Sarah laughs in relief and goes to hug TJ, who's bent over in pain from the blow. And through huffs, TJ asks about the others. Well, Howard ran off alone and Hollis is dead, Axel mm-hmm. informs him. They decide what they need to do is get the girls up top, send them to get more help, and they can worry about Howard. TJ leads the way over to the elevator, but when they arrive, the elevator had already been sent back up and the control panel has been busted.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh my God, is that legit the only way out? How is the killer even going to get out? What the heck?
So it is kind of confusing because they have the elevator, the mine carts, And technically you can walk up the mine cart path.
Oh, it's not too steep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 Okay.
There's no way we're getting out of here, TJ says. What are we going to do? Cries Sarah. Climb, Axel says. He wastes no time and starts up the ladder. So there's a ladder that goes up the elevator shaft. I don't know.
No, I couldn't risk it because like, what if someone
That's
drops
so
that
scary.
Shaft down and I get right. crushed? Like I couldn't take the chances. I'd rather do the minecart or like walk out the minecart path.
Exactly. Yeah. No one's excited about this, Patty most of all, but it's really their only option, apparently, in parentheses.
Apparently, yeah.
Because they're acting like it's their only option.
Sure.
So it's a tense climb. Patty nearly falls, and honestly, fair enough, because she is in heels, climbing a ladder in heels, which, no thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Out of nowhere, Howard's dead body comes falling by them.
Okay.
His neck is tied with a rope. and like he bounces at the as the rope goes taut, and Patty screams while blood splashes all over Sarah's face. The rope lets go and Howard plummets to the ground below. TJ yells for everyone to go back down quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That bastard's really playing games with us, Axel says. But TJ thinks they can beat him if they get over to the rail cars right now.
Mm-hmm.
Axel agrees and leads the group through a shortcut. It's a wonky shortcut that's narrow and wet. So Axel sends TJ with the girls across first and tells TJ to holler once they've made it. They make it through and holler back to Axel, but at that moment, they hear Axel groan and then a large splash and then silence.
Oh.
The group hurries back to find the plank railing snapped, and TJ looks over into the murky water below. Do something, TJ, Sarah pleads. I can't. It's 60 feet deep, he responds.
Oh.
Patty and Sarah are distraught, but TJ insists that we have to keep moving. So okay. They do.
Now it is. It's seeming like it's neither of them.
Mm.
Is it really just going to be Harry?
The trio heads back to the carts, but at a fork in the tunnels, TJ tells the girls to continue down the left path, and he takes the right. And only a few seconds after they've gone their separate ways, the sound of tumbling rocks comes from TJ's side.
My, what did I tell you, Caitlin?
I know. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
They had to do it. I knew they had to. We're in a mine. They're going to make it happen. Ugh. Mm-hmm.
So the girls come running back, calling for TJ, but they get no answer. So they just do what they can. They continue to walk back on that left path. They walk and they walk until, bang, they walk right into Harry Warden, who jams something straight into Patty's stomach. And Patty goes down hard. Sarah makes a quick U-turn going back the way she came. And we're going to cut away.
Okay, this movie is actually so good.
It honestly is.
It actually, like, I have to go, it's so sorry to the 80s, I have to go in with low expectations. Just as, like, a fun time. Like, I know I'm going to have fun, but I'm not going to really be invested. But I'm, like, genuinely invested.
Right? No, it's, honestly, I was kind of surprised.
Yeah.
And I do want to watch the remake, but I'm glad I went with the original.
Yeah.
Up above, the chief, mayor, and other officers slash, I think, random townsfolk, hard to tell, have arrived. It's chaotic, but they're here to find the kids. So Sarah's backed herself up against a wall down in the mine, and she's just crying now. She seems hopeless, with no way out of here and no one to help her. Slowly, a hand reaches for her from behind and abruptly grabs her shoulder. Sarah screams before realizing it's just TJ.
Right.
Blood dripping down his forehead. He embraces Sarah before leading her down more tunnels in a hurry. They finally make it to the carts, and TJ starts messing with the controls to try to get everything started. But as he does, Harry Warden appears around a corner and begins his slow stalk toward them. TJ gets the carts running and tells Sarah to jump in, so they both do. But so does Harry Warden. TJ and Sarah climb forward from cart to cart as it makes its ascent to the surface, and Harry does the same, like following them.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneously, the chief, mayor, and other men are walking at a quick pace toward, like, down the tracks, flashlights in hand.
Okay, I do have to stop you because have you seen that Scooby-Doo episode in the mine cart with the mine carts? For some reason, there's a distinct episode that stands out to me that involved minecarts, and all I hear in my head right now as you're telling the story is do 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 do, like the little Scooby-Doo.
Oh yes, perfect. No, that's
jingle.
It's playing in the movie for sure. So yeah. Like, I think you should just stick with that. I love it. Harry Warden catches up to TJ, who's like the middleman in this lineup, and tries to use his pickaxe on TJ.
Mm-hmm.
But TJ uses a shovel to stop the blow, and then ensues a pretty wild, like, axe versus shovel fight on moving minecarts. But it's not too long, because then they both fall out and start whacking each other some more. Sarah jumps off the cart to join them as the cart continues up. Yeah. I know.
You have fun with that. I'll be up here. Bye. I'll go get help.
Exactly. So the cart continues up the tracks empty, and it passes the group that's coming down. So they're kind of close now.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah and TJ walk backward down the track while Harry swings the axe at them. Reaching a small cubby tunnel on the side marked with a sign that says danger, TJ ushers Sarah inside and then follows her. Harry follows too, and the men continue going at it with their respective weapons.
Mm-hmm.
In the chaos, support walls and beams are being hit repeatedly. Harry gets TJ pinned on the ground and Sarah lunges for his face. I don't know why I'm laughing.
Okay.
She pulls down his respirator, revealing his face.
Okay.
Who is it?
Okay. Final answer is Axel.
Axel, why? TJ says in shock. Good job!
Oh my gosh. There was something a little suspicious about his death.
For sure. And, yeah, because you don't see it.
It really worked out, like, the timing of when he wasn't there and, you know. So I didn't want to let the quote death fool me. I'm so proud of myself.
This is one of those movies that's fun to watch a second time and be like, oh, so he went off screen there so he could come back as Axel. Like, oh, I see. Like, it's kind of fun. Love that. Yeah,
cool.
A close-up of Axel's face fades into a memory. Axel's father was one of the men killed by Harry Warden during the original attack all those years ago, and he had been in the room to witness it. While Axel's in his dream trance, TJ pushes him with two hands, and Axel falls backward into a weak support beam. The ceiling begins to fall, and TJ grabs Sarah, leading her out of the room. They make it out just in time as the ceiling collapses on Axel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Little tie-in.
Right? When TJ and Sarah make it out of the tunnel, they run right into the group who had come to rescue them. "It isn't Harry Warden," TJ says to the chief. "I know," he responds. "I got a call from Eastfield this evening. Harry Warden died 5 years ago."
Oh, okay. Now that explains what? We don't have records.
Yeah.
Okay.
They had, like, put them away somewhere.
Okay.
"Well, then who is it?" the mayor asks. "It's Axel," TJ informs him. The chief and mayor have had their flabbergasted. TJ and Sarah walk up the tracks as the men begin to dig out of the rubble. "He's alive," one of the men yells. So Sarah and TJ run back to the scene. Through a gap in the rubble, we can see Axel crawling away down a tunnel on the other side.
Ew.
"Haniger," he yells, which is TJ. "I'll be waiting in hell for you. This whole fucking town is going to die. I'm coming back, you bastards." He laughs maniacally as he moves farther away. "Sarah, be my bloody Valentine," are his final words before he disappears, singing into the dark mine. The end.
That was fun.
It is fun.
That was fun. I'm so happy it wasn't Harry. I would have been a bit disappointed if it was. Mm-hmm. It's fun that he's, like, just crawling back into the mine at the end.
Yeah.
And it's like a cycle thing in a way.
Sure. Right, right.
Okay. This is everything I need from an 80s movie.
Exactly. I think it's super fun. So Act 3 has 8 questions.
Okay.
So 3A. Do you let your friends go into the mine without you?
Does this mean the other option is I have to go with them?
Yeah. That's all I mean by that. Yeah.
Okay. Let me put myself in a little bit of a younger position like these people.
Sure.
I'm going to say there's a 81% chance that I'm staying.
Okay.
I'm not going with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that you had to put yourself in a younger frame of mind where I didn't do that and I still gave myself a 5% because I'm ready to go, baby. Let's go down in that mine.
No, because me now, like 100% I'm not going.
Yeah.
100%. But there's a chance I would if I was younger. Yeah.
That's so funny. So, 3B, Cassie.
What?
I just like the wording of this question. Do you... Sorry. It's not that funny. Do you skip out on boiler room mind sex?
Boiler room mind sex. I would say 99%.
That's what I put too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's just no
1% chance where it's like, if I'm feeling crazy.
you've had a lot to drink and you're like, wow, this is a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
3C. Do you leave the party as opposed to going to find the others in the mine like TJ and Axel did?
Oh, yeah. I'd let other people. If no one else was going to go check on them, maybe I would grab a buddy and go. But if there's already people going, I'm not adding to that. So I'll say like 89.
I gave myself 90. So yeah.
Yeah.
Like I don't think I'm Axel or TJ in that situation.
Nah.
3D. Now this one's funny because you already said this, your answer to this one. 3D. Oh. Do you just leave Mike and Harriet in the mine?
100%. Literally 100%. Y'all have fun.
That they, you're not putting my life in danger.
No.
I gave myself a 65 because I think I'd be more likely to leave them because, like, nah, you're not getting me killed because you did a stupid thing.
I guess I'm thinking of it, like, as they're not my close friends. Like, if it was a close friend of mine with their boyfriend, I would have to lower it. But it seems like the dynamic here, like, they aren't very – they're just people at a party together. It's like, well, no.
Yeah. Okay, 3E – and this is a deadly question. Do you escape the nail gun attack? I gave myself a 12 because it is very much one of those. And then he shows up and shoots him. Like,
I'll one down you. I'll go 11% because I'm just, you're right. There's just no way.
3F, also deadly. Do you stay with the group, unlike Howard?
Oh, 100.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did 98.
Yeah.
3G, deadly question. Do you survive Harry Warden stabbing you in the stomach, and I put in all caps, out of nowhere? I gave myself a 1.
What was she stabbed with, by the way?
I actually don't know.
Yeah, interesting.
I can't tell.
Probably the usual hook or whatever.
The pickaxe?
Pickaxe, yeah.
Yeah, it probably was that, but like it didn't – it wasn't that clear.
Yeah, I'm actually going to agree with a 1%.
He really just kind of like pops out behind a wall and just like –
not fair.
You know, one of those, unfortunately for us.
Yeah.
And the final question, also a deadly question. 3H, are you able to successfully battle Axel with your shovel? On moving minecarts and then not on moving minecarts.
Right.
And then there's stuff falling from the ceiling.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to have to say 18%.
I did 18. Look at
us. Oh my gosh. We don't believe in ourselves the same amount.
I love that. That's beautiful. Amazing. Good for us.
Friendship.
So for Act 3, E, F, G, and H are all deadly. And you can get your average now.
So this is very interesting. My third act score came out to a 47%.
Okay. Mine was a 40. I feel like we should have a bigger gap, but like, I guess.
I think we would if we didn't account for previous. I'm curious about where we're going to, our final, like, overall score is going to come out, because I feel like you're more likely to be in this third act.
Right.
And I am not. And that's, I think, why you're expecting a bigger gap.
That's
because,
true.
Like, I shouldn't even be in the third act, you know?
Right.
But I'm here and I got to play the game.
Exactly. Exactly. That's true. What's interesting for me is, like, my act one was 43, act two was 43, act three was 40.
Yeah.
So I got a final of 42. I like stayed consistent the whole way through.
Okay. Mine came out to a 45%.
Wow.
Yep.
That's kind of surprising. I mean, again, it's because you have to play the game.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because otherwise we would be very different.
Put in these situations, like forced into these situations, we are kind of on the same level with each other as far as decision-making here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that brings us to an overall combined score of a
44%,
which I think is fair for the film itself.
Yeah. Well, you got to be under 50 in a film like this just because of the state of the killer and how he's doing these kills. Like you can't – I feel like we're in the mid-range because it's like, oh, these people are making stupid decisions and it like enticing this killer.
Mm-hmm.
But he's here and there's really nothing you can do about it. So
So we're kind of probably screwed. But
yeah.
That was fun. I enjoyed that episode. I feel like the 80s ones always just end up being a great time.
Great pick-me-up.
That's, you know,
I don't need coffee. I just needed that story, and now I feel very awake.
A little bit of murder and some romance on the side, and everything was fine again.
Yeah.
So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. You can also check us out over on our Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. And there you can find a link to our Discord where you too can submit your own scores using our worksheet that will do the math for you, which is very exciting. So go over there to check that out and let us know. Would you survive?
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.